It's time for Sounding Off with Phil Goff.
Morena, Mayor Phil Goff, how are you?
Atamarie, I'm very happy. The weather is lousy, but 3 hours ago I had a grandson born. So,
congratulations!
Yeah.
that's lovely.
My first grandson and second grandchild. So I'm just glad I didn't have to go through all the hard labour, so to speak.
Lovely.
Stuck at my desk in Auckland, and I'd really like to be down and be celebrating with my family. So probably I'll do that later in the week.
Oh, well, big congratulations. And also congratulations on returning as the mayor for Auckland City. We're going to start by asking you, what are some of the things you're hoping to achieve in your term as mayor?
Well, I started drawing up a list, and by the time I got to about 1,000, I decided that I'd better do it a different way. Look, I think the three key things are, first of all, continuing to build the infrastructure the city needs to function properly. So it's about, growth in the city and matching the growth with the infrastructure for transport, for housing and for the environment. And we've laid some really strong foundations for that, 50% increase in investment in our transport network, another $9 billion over what we put in the previous 3 years. For the 10-year budget. Everybody knows, and God, I had that experience this morning on the motorway, wet weather, one breakdown, and you're gridlocked. So we've just got to keep building that alternative transport nodes, getting the CRL completed so we double the heavy rail capacity, getting that light rail started and, pushing the government on that, making sure that we've got the walk and cycle ways, including the sky path and the sea path over on the shore, continuing to clean up the water quality, getting the central interceptor built, which will be substantially done through this term and into the start of the next term. It's dealing with climate change is another really big one, and that's just the dimensions of that and what we can do as a council working in conjunction with central government will be a key challenge. Tidying up our council structure and particularly our council-controlled organisations, to find out one of the CCOs had the year before last decided that they would have a performance incentive bonus that gave the CEO another $80,000 a year. Well, we are not the private sector. We don't operate like that. We've got to have some consistency in pay across council. And if you get a CCO chief executive being paid practically the same or sometimes more than the council chief executive, there's something wrong with the structure there. So I indicated months ago that I'd be doing a review, and the review will now encompass having remuneration that is consistent right across the council grouping, just so that the thing makes more sense, but mainly to ensure that you've got accountability and responsiveness.
Mm-hmm.
So shall I stop for breath there?
That does lead quite well onto something I was going to ask, which is kind of that idea of accountability, a big topic during the whole, electoral campaign for across the board, is how can we make council more accessible for the public, basically? How do we sort of tackle the criticism that council's a bit too big and remote for its citizens? How are you going to deal with that, Phil?
Yeah, it's a bit strange in a way, because having worked at both the central government level and the local government level, local government is far more accessible and it does far more consultation than central government ever does. So that when I come up with a budget proposal each year, and I'll have to do the coming year in the next month or two, I make a proposal and it goes out, and there's practically 5 months of consultation where we work to and fro with communities, with representatives, where people come to have your say meetings, where we take submissions online and in print form. But all of that still doesn't add up with a sense of people being able to get their questions answered. And what I've been starting to talk about over the last couple of days is how we can use forums, and then your radio station is clearly one of those those forums, where people can ask the questions and get the answers, and not simply from me, but so that we line up the chief executive of Auckland Transport, and I put out something and say, okay, Come in with your questions. What don't you understand about Auckland Transport? What annoys you about it? What do you want them doing differently? And then, you know, getting the chief executive and any of the advisors that he might want to have in front of the public and directly answering the questions, I think would be a really good idea. And so, you know, maybe expect some further discussions, you know, with BFM, and I'll be doing the same with, you know, Stuff and NZME and Radio New Zealand and the rest of them.
Oh, great. Well, we look forward to that. That does sound like a good way of doing that.
It's kind of like a modern town hall meeting. You know, in the old days, you just have a town hall meeting. But what I've done, you know, I've done a lot of town hall meetings in the last couple of months, you know, probably 100 of them. And what you do is you get a particular section of the community coming through. And what I want to do is try to reach out to a wider section of the community. Mm-hmm. And the way to do that is online and through the media. So that's one of the things I'm exploring. And, you know, I'd welcome any ideas back from you and your listeners as to how we might most usefully do that. But so we can get that feedback and improve the communication links.
Absolutely. Well, you heard that, BFM listeners. If you've got suggestions, 5395 is the text number, and we'll pass them on. Another thing that I guess ties into that too is talking a little bit about some of the youth access points to council. So the Youth Advisory Board's been in the news because it's been accusing the council of ageism for paying members of its youth panel 30% less than its older advisors. Firstly, could you just explain a little bit about what the Youth Advisory Board is and what they do?
Yeah, well, we've got what's called six demographic advisory panels, and that's to reach out with different sections of the community. So there's disability, there's ethnic, there's Pacific, there's rainbow, there's seniors, and there's youth. And, you know, it goes back to your earlier question, you know, with the size of the Auckland Council, 1.7 million people, you know, you obviously don't have the same sort of contact that you had when I grew up with the Mount Roskill Borough Council, you know, only 50,000 people, and you could kind of wander in and see the mayor. And accessibility was a good thing, and the lack of conformity and standard setting and regional planning was the downside of that. So one of the things that was set up were these demographic advisory panels, and the difference with the youth panel was that they indicated a desire to have one representative per ward of the council. Most of the panels are, you know, maybe at 11 people. The youth one was 21, which made it more expensive. We pay fees to the members that are appointed to those, and they are generally $250 a meeting, but for the youth panel, I think it was $173. Partly it was size, but partly there was comments made about, well, you know, the pay should reflect experience and skill, etc. Now, I've since done a review of those panels. The changes I want to see are, one, that the youth panel should not just be, you know, you shouldn't be there representing a ward. You should be there looking at the wider issues of challenges for young people and expressing the views of young people across the community. So the idea is that we will bring the youth panel into conformity with the other panels, first of all in size, but secondly also in the meeting fees that are paid for the people that attend that. Now, you get paid for attendance, but of course, hopefully you're doing quite a lot of preparation work so that you can have a decent input into those panels. And then I'm also going to try and get a better link between my office and the panels so that some of the things that they talk about, they can feed into me. At the moment, they've got a senior councillor that's a liaison officer. They have, each panel has a different liaison officer. But basically, it's about another way of feeding information and giving advice into the council and hearing back from council.
There's a bit of debate around whether it's useful to have these, kind of specific panels for specific demographics. There's obviously a lot of positives to that. Do you think there is any credit to the fear that maybe you're ghettoising certain voices as well?
No, I don't think so, because, you know, everybody has the same, you know, range of ways of talking to their councillors, talking to their local boards, and local boards are also part of, you know, with the super city, the local board would reflect the local community, and they would represent, you know, pretty much what the old boroughs did and deal with the local issues. But I think in each of those groups that we've set up, there are specific views that are not always as well represented on the makeup of council as we would desire to be. And we are getting better. We're now 45% of our councillors this time around are women, so we're getting close to that gender equity in terms of representation. We've got three Pacifica members, which is at least proportionate to Pacifica's size. We've got one ethnic community representative who's Chinese. We've got... and we've got, there's one person on that represents the rainbow, is a member of the rainbow community. He doesn't represent the rainbow community, he represents the whole of the ward that he represents. Mm-hmm. But those were, you know, we want to make sure that as much as possible, our council is reflective of and representative of the wider community. But then that also comes down to voting because, you know, when some communities don't turn out to vote, then their voice doesn't get heard. Other communities turn out to vote in large numbers, and you know that would particularly be the wealthier, better educated, and older communities. But we also need to be representative of, you know, what we do affects new generations of people coming through, which is why we're keen to get more voices of young people. We've got two councillors in their 30s, Shane Henderson and Richard Hills, and they would call themselves, I think, youth adjacent rather than youth. But it's really important that we have that feedback in. So, you know, I do value what the Youth Advisory panel has to tell us.
All right, well, I think that might be all we've got time for this morning, but we really appreciate speaking to you every week, and huge congratulations on your new grandson. Does he have a name yet, or is it?
No. They're still getting over the experience. I think the baby's about 3 weeks early, but no, really great. I said, look, couldn't you have done this just before the election? we're all thrilled to bits about that. So two grandchildren now, so we won't just be spoiling one. So we'll share the love. Okay.
Oh well, congratulations. Much, lovely to speak to you. Thanks.
Thank you. Bye.
That was Sounding Off with Phil Goff. It's